All right. Well, good morning, everyone, on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. You know, a lot of you know that as a community, we value the voices of our community. And so, which is a reason you see each Sunday, a lot of times we have a different voice up here for the homily. And so this Sunday is no different. This Sunday we have a special treat, someone who's been part of our community for a while now, Tim Brosnan, him and his wife Dee. Been part of Vox as well as their three daughters, which I see you've got your crew up here ready to support you. Nice. So why don't we invite Tim up, give him a warm welcome as he opens the word up to us.
Morning. All right, we're going to start a quick poll, just show of hands. When I say the words connect, connected, connection, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? So, I'm going to ask where you fall. I came up with a few categories. All right. Is it a technological connotation for you? You think about like Wi-Fi, internet, stuff like that? Raise your hand if you're in that category. Okay. How about a means to an end, like a business connection or a connecting flight, something like that? No one. Wow. All right. How about relationship, like a relational connection? Excellent. Yeah, so connect, it's a versatile word, right? And I think it's one that's used so often that we can forget the power of what connection means, connecting means. Our text this morning is John 15, and Jesus is going to talk about what connection means to him and to one another. I'm going to intro this topic. For some of you, you're at the Vox Fall Retreat. It's one of my favorite places in the world, is Lady Lodge. And we're going to watch a quick video and then and talk about that a bit. Okay. So it's always beautiful out there. That Saturday morning, so there's cypress trees all along the Frio River, and the camp sits down in this canyon, and all those cypress trees had started to lose their needles, and it was the wind had kind of blown in that morning, and so for hours you had just what felt like a snowfall of cypress needles, and it was beautiful. I mean, it felt magical. And after breakfast, Jason led us in some contemplative prayer, and we're sitting there in that pavilion that you could see, and he's kind of leading us, and I just kept watching these needles fall and drop and spin, and so like that, my prayer became, God, would you blow through my mind, blow out all the distraction, the anxiety, all this dead stuff, to make room for new growth. Help me be present and connect with the people around me. What we were witnessing with those cypress trees was the natural process by which things that are not useful to the tree are blown off, shed to make room for new growth, things that are helpful to the tree. And in John 15, we're going to look at this idea, the vine and the branches, and how God guides and tends us toward growth, deeper connection, and ultimately fruitfulness. So we're going to read it together, as is our tradition. Words are up here. Go ahead. Okay, so starting out with the first two verses there. I am the true vine, my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. So I'm not a vine dresser, but I do prune trees for a living. I'm an arborist. So if you guys will allow me, I'm going to tweak the metaphor just a bit and talk about trees. Quick primer on tree biology. So trees grow toward light, toward the sun, because sunlight equals life for them. Photosynthesis takes place in the leaves, provides energy for the trees to grow. I'll get to that in a little bit. So trees, you know, like picture sequoias or giant redwoods, they reach up hundreds of feet to find light. We've got live oaks in Austin that will twist and turn and go out 40, 50 feet to find the light they need. But no matter the species, from the deepest roots to the highest leaf, it's a flow of energy, water, nutrients. And typically, what's good for a branch is good for the tree. It's this flow of health and growth, and it benefits all, right? Pruning, though, comes in when what's good for the branch is not good for the tree, or what maybe is not truly good for the branch is also not good for the tree. In the built environment, so I actually literally prune trees on a daily basis, and a lot of the pruning has to do in a city like Austin. I'm pruning trees away from people or cars or buildings. Instead of letting a branch grow out into traffic where it can get hit by a delivery truck, I prune it so that it directs growth away and avoids wounding, because wounding equals decay and poor health of the tree. Another reason I prune is when often trees will grow together, you'll have one branch on top of another, and it branches, the heavier they are, start to rub, and then a wound develops, and again, decay comes into the picture. So pruning essentially is a redirection of growth and energy for the sake of both the health of the branch and the health of the tree. So Jesus, in his teaching about the vine and the branches, growing up, I heard this a lot, right? It's kind of common theme, vine and the branches. Thinking back on it, though, it always seemed like it was an individual pursuit, like becoming a better branch, like a better Christian. What I want to look at today is the communal aspects, the connections between one another and God. So I've got a story from 2016, a couple years ago. Our family was in the midst of a pretty intense season of life. There was no crisis, nothing terrible going on, but just felt super frenzied. We were running pretty thin, and we had family out in Fredericksburg, and we were visiting out there a bunch, and we started thinking, like, maybe we should leave Austin, slow down, kind of recuperate a bit. And so, you know, we thought we could maybe have the best of both worlds. It got to the point where we had a property picked out. We'd visited it twice. I'd be on Google SketchUp trying to figure out how to orient the front porch. And like, I was on the phone with the Gillespie County tax appraisal office asking how to get an agricultural exemption for the property. It got pretty serious. And then this pruning happened. So we had Dee's best friend. I guess Dee had mentioned to her, you know, like, we found this property. And we hadn't shared with any of our friends. In fact, our good friends who live across the street from us are here, and we didn't even think about telling them, because that was too much of an issue. Dee's best friend writes her an email, and I'm gonna read you the first line and talk about it a bit. So it says, "So it's weird to write you an email, because that's not our usual MO. But I've been ruminating and thinking and praying and crying and processing ever since Friday when you told me about the Fredericksburg property. And I really want to get this right. I want to walk through this whole part of our friendship in love and integrity and intention. And for me, often writing is the best." So these are friends that we have decades of history with. And so what she went on to say was, she's excited and great. If Fredericksburg is a place, that's fine. I want what God has for you guys. But think about, like, what about the spontaneity of shared life together? Like the hangouts and the sleepovers and the, like, running to get groceries for one another. And then what about raising our families together? What about the same school and community and having that together. And then, you know, we have family in town. What about your nephews and your nieces and the cousins of your kids? And I've got a brother and sister in town. Dee has a brother in town. And we're all super close. Their families are here too. And they weren't afraid to put in their two cents about this whole moving idea. But it was always like them telling us what they thought would be good or bad for us. And what was great about Stacy is that in the kindest yet pretty bold way, she was saying, like, it's actually not just about you guys. Like, think about, you're connected here. Like, we're in relationship. This is deep. And yeah, I'm not saying you can't do it, but really think. And it was a great, like, it reoriented, it redirected our hearts and our minds about Austin. And since then, like, this is not an exaggeration, I think about our city differently. Like, it opened my eyes to all these connections we have, things that I kind of was taking for granted. And so I don't take it for granted anymore. I love this city. It's not without its flaws, but we are rooted in the place that I feel is best. And it took, as a part of that, to get there, a good friend saying, hey, like, consider this, your connectedness. So it can be attractive, right, to live freely, independently. But John 15 is a reminder that we're a part of a much bigger living organism, that Jesus is the vine, the Father, the vine dresser. We're the branches. Our health and well-being is bound up in the whole organism, not just the individual parts. And God's pruning is toward that end. So, as a spiritual practice, I would encourage us to consider Austin, right, is a changing place. It's hot in the summer. There's traffic and people moving in all the time. If you've been here longer than a year, you probably complain about it a lot. But if this city affects us and our neighbors, and if we affect the city for good or ill, what's our small part in our neighborhoods to make the collective whole stronger, to make this city a healthier, livelier, and more equitable place? We're going to move on to verse 3 now and talk about the idea of abiding. So it says, "Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." So the Big Lebowski aside, the word abide is not one we hear all that often, right? Abiding equals remaining, staying connected. It's the most natural thing a branch can do. A branch can't live apart from the tree, right? It depends on the tree for support. It depends on it for survival. And it is part of a flow. It's not just a recipient of things from the tree, but our participant in a flow of life through the tree. And now you can put up that really nerdy slide here. This is a look at transpiration and photosynthesis. So what it's showing is you've got photosynthesis that happens in the leaves. There's evaporation that actually pulls water up against gravity into the leaves. Photosynthesis takes place, which produces sugars and goes back down into where it needs to be used in the tree and then stored in the roots. So there's this like cycling through back and forth and all around that takes place in a tree. So in a sense, there's a sharing and a circulation of gifts and resources within a tree. And the abiding for a branch, I think we could say, is staying connected and participating in that flow. So I got a story. In January, we were working on pruning some post oaks not far from here, just around the corner from Figure 8. And it was a really cold day. The high that day was 33, so pretty cold. And we were taking care of this tree, and this old man from down the block came up to me, and he was wearing a zip-up, like a jumpsuit, insulated jumpsuit, and he was proud of it. It was like the first day he got to wear this. And he's like, hey, can I have some of that firewood, or can I have some of the trimmings for firewood? And I said, oh, yeah, sure, no problem. And typically, that happens a lot on job sites. And so typically, it's like, yeah, sure, you can have it. And the person says thanks, and you know, I go back to work. And but that day was different. And looking back at it, it wasn't really like a conscious decision, but in a sense, there was this like abide. Like, I'm going to abide in this, in the unfolding of this day. There's like an open handedness that I had, partially because of this man, Mr. Lewis. So, so I stopped what I was doing and started talking to him, and he's 91 years old. He'd lived on the block since 1945. He grew up going to the original East Anderson, or the Anderson High School on the east side, played basketball. He's like, yeah, we, you know, when we were kids, we lived off the land. We could hunt and fish right here in East Austin. And so just like telling me, you know, all about what it was like and all the changes that he had seen. And then he's like, okay, well, you know, just leave the branches there and I'll be back in a little bit. So I was like, okay, great. I went to the backyard and got up. I was climbing up in this other tree, and maybe 30 minutes goes by. And he walks back, and I'm climbing above him, and he yells up. He goes, y'all like McDonald's? And I was like, thinking, no, I don't really like McDonald's. He goes, I'll be your McDonald's. I was like, all right. And I looked down, and he had walked across with a platter that had a pot of coffee, sugar, cream, and then he sets it down, and then he goes and he gets an extension cord and plugs the pot in to keep it warm for us. And I mean, I kind of wanted to cry. So I come down from the tree and have a cup of coffee with him. And I was like, Mr. Lewis, you take too good care of us. I mean, this is great. I've never had anybody do this. He goes, God takes good care of us. It's like, it's all from his hand. And it's like, I agree. And then he just wanted to work. He's like, no, hey, we got it. He's like, we'll stack up the branches, take them over. He's like, nope, I'm going to work with you guys. So for an hour, maybe more, he was back there raking, stacking branches and everything. And in that shared manual labor, we experienced camaraderie and connection. Yeah, there was like firewood exchange. Like I gave him firewood, he gave me coffee. We swapped stories, but it was that camaraderie and connection. And in that, I became more to him than a tree guy, and he became more to me than just a guy down the block. We shared our resources and energy that day for a way that, or in a way that benefited us both. So my question, thinking about that, reflecting on that story, is could it be that those connections are there between us, all of us, but we often don't recognize them? And maybe the abiding that John talks about is a matter of remaining in this natural state of connectedness, the connectedness to God and to one another, and that, as Mr. Lewis said, God takes good care of us. Gifts we have are from his hand, so why not share them? Why not keep them in circulation? Why not be good neighbors and then practice what Mother Teresa called the small things with great love? And so I want to just for a minute do a little spiritual practice live here. If everyone would close their eyes, just take a deep breath in, let it out. Consider this idea of being connected to one another, that as natural as it is for a branch to be connected to a tree, we are connected to one another. Can you picture an individual that you've been passing by without recognizing that connection? Maybe at work, maybe a neighbor, maybe someone here in this room. And how could you reach out to make that connection? Okay. Now we're going to finish up with the idea of fruitfulness in verse 5. Here's verse 5. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Fruitfulness is a result of pruning and abiding. We've got a peach tree in our backyard, and fruit trees are a little bit, they need more pampering. So if I don't prune it in the winter, there'll be tons of growth in every direction, but it's not necessarily good growth for the health and strength of the tree. And if I prune it, it produces fruit, sweet. If I don't, it's just kind of plenty of small peaches, no good for eating. In that same passage in John 15, the same vine and branches conversation, Jesus says, abide in my love. Love one another as I have loved you. And this whole conversation is happening at the Last Supper. So he and the disciples are hours away from their worlds being turned upside down. Violence and injustice. And still, it's plan A. It's love. There's no plan B. There's no take up your sword. It's love. Love your God. Love one another. Love your enemies. Jesus' teachings can be cut and copied and pasted into self-help or self-righteousness. They can bring about division and dogma. Like my peach tree, his words detached from his person can create a whole bunch of growth in a whole bunch of directions. But it's not necessarily toward health or strength or the good of the tree or fruitfulness. So Jesus and his friends spent life together. Pruning and abiding happened in the midst of relationship, friendship. The fruit then also grew out of that relationship, relationship to God and to one another. Religion often can produce fear, judgment, division. But what Jesus was calling his friends to, and what I believe we are called to as well, is to reach across dividing lines, to bridge gaps, and to break down walls. A friend of mine introduced me to this organization called Narrative 4. And I think they're doing fantastic work in this area. We're going to watch a clip here.
Do I carry a gun with me always? Everywhere I go. This is the first time in 5 or 6 years I didn't have a firearm on me. I did bring a knife.
I personally hate guns now. When we were shot, there's nothing I could have done had I been armed with guns in every pocket.
Okay, so that was just the introduction. If you couldn't read it, so what they do is they bring people together, together, and they pair up. Each one shares their personal story, and then they tell one another's story in the first person. I've got a quote by one of my favorite authors, David James Duncan. Says, Jesus' words, love thy neighbor as thyself, to cite a famously ignored example, demands an arduous, imaginative act. This deceptively simple line orders me, as I look at you, to imagine that I'm seeing not you, but me, and then to treat this imaginative me, alias you, as if you are me. Jesus orders anyone who is serious about him to commit the neighbor equals me fiction until they forget
for good? Which of the two of themselves to cheat in a business deal or abandon in a crisis or smart bomb in a war? At which point their imaginative act, their fiction making, will have turned Christ's bizarre words into a reality, and they'll be saying with Mother Teresa, "I see Christ in every woman and man." So that's what we're going to see in this next clip.
One day my friend and I were arrested for vandalism because we were caught throwing tomatoes in a field. The cops brought me home, and my father was so upset, he punched me in the face with his fist, full force. And that was the first time I stood up to my father, and I said, "Are you telling me because I threw tomatoes in a field, you're going to hit me with your fist?" And he backed down and never hit me again because he realized that I wasn't going to take it. I suffer with the effects of MS, and if anybody wanted to take me down, I'd be an easy target. So I carry a gun because it keeps me safe. I feel safe if I have a gun. It levels the playing field. I just want to keep my family safe. My name is Todd.
My name is Carol. I'm an artist. I was self-employed. I had my own company. What I was most proud of in my life was... What I was most proud of is I was a mother. I loved my kids. I had two boys and two girls. My daughter, Kirsten, was a social butterfly. An amazing woman. I had a heart of gold. It was near Valentine's Day. She wanted to go get some cards for some of her friends. So we went to the mall in Salt Lake City. We hear a loud bang. We didn't know what it was. And then I saw the shooter stand in front of me. He shot me in my arm. And I was on the ground, and he shot me again in the back. And then I watched him put the shotgun against my daughter's head and ended her life. I complained to my daughter about her messy room at times. I would give anything to be able to have a messy room again. My name is Carolyn.
Really powerful. So Narrative 4 is doing this all over the world with different issues and different populations. But I love it how literally these men and women are committing the neighbor equals me fiction that David James Duncan talks about. The connectedness across those dividing lines is so clear in that footage. The mission is to equip people to use their stories to build empathy, shatter stereotypes, break down barriers, and ultimately make the world a better place. And I think there's a lot of fruit in that endeavor. So as we go from here this morning, how can we follow that lead of building empathy and understanding? How can we listen to one another's stories in a way that becomes our story as well? To close out, Sufjan Stevens is going to sing our closing today. The words will be up on the screen.
For praise the mountain and the rain, all the gifts that still remain. But the greatest gift of all, and the law above all laws, is to love your friends and lovers, to lay down your life for your brothers, as you abide in peace, so will your delight increase. As the mystery of the cross is the love joy lost the toss, sorrow still remains. So I run to my friends and lovers, I lay down my life for my brothers, as I abide in peace, so will my delight.